Knife Talk is sponsored by Even Heat, the manufacturers of the finest heat-treating ovens available. Find your next oven at evenheat-kiln.com. To the chopper!
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening. Whenever you're listening to us, this is Knife Talk. I'm Marco Malmasi here with Jeff Fader of Fader Knives and Craig Lockwood of Chop Knives. This is where we talk about knives. We answer questions. We give each other fritz, as Jeff would say. And we most of all just kind of try to have a good time. So let's kick it off with the last week. How's last week been for you guys? Sorry I couldn't be here last episode. My internet connection sucked, but we got that fixed.
Well, it's good now. You've got that fixed. That's the best part. We're all good.
Yeah.
We managed to sneak you in last week just to do a little bit of news.
Yeah, slipped you in a little bit.
Yeah.
For about 45 seconds. It was awesome.
Yeah.
Well, this real quickly, today is Craig's birthday. As we're recording. Yeah, you little fucker. It's your birthday. And I found out about it, and I just want to wish you a happy birthday.
Congratulations. I knew I should never have accepted your friend request on Facebook.
Well, there you go. It's your problem. It's your
own. Happy birthday, buddy.
What could you do? Happy birthday. What are you doing for your birthday?
Relaxing, mm-hmm. Yeah. So it's nice. Wake up. We had the babies come into bed with us, had breakfast in bed, and yeah, it's just been nice and relaxing. So you know what it's like when you get, you know, just that little bit older, you don't really want to be going out partying and so on. So we're just going out for a quiet meal this evening and taking it easy.
And no audio issues. That's like the audio birthday present right there.
It is. Compared to last week, where we had 90 minutes trying to sort things out, this is going to be nice and smooth.
All right. Well, there you go. Happy birthday.
Thank you very much. So what about you, Jeff? What have you been doing this week?
Last week was a lot of stuff. I'm actually in talks with a new chef. I'm going to do a signature series knife with the chef that Tony and I know for a while. And good dude, New York guy. We're working out the details. It's going to be a completely different style knife than the ones I've done with other chefs. And we're looking forward to that. I did a couple little side projects that I'm, you know, not super excited to do, but I did those. And, you know, it's cold. I actually was supposed to have, I kind of mentioned last week, I'm actually going to be doing a little bit of work with the guys from Broadbeck Ironworks. Chris Cash, Mount Phillip Metalworks, one of the best guys in the metalworking business, such a super nice guy, introduced me to the guys from Broadbeck Ironworks, and they're two knife makers, Vince and Ryan, who make, they make a grinder, 2x72 grinder. And I know that Jay Nielsen is on the sponsor team, and so is Chris Zepp from Make Everything Shop, and they approached me, and they were actually going to come up yesterday and bring up a grinder and test it out and, you know, start to fool around with it. And it started snowing here, and they were coming from Virginia, and we all agreed that don't get stuck in the snow for a grinder. So, I like these guys. I mean, I've talked to them on the phone. They're super interesting guys. And one of the differences between these guys and a lot of guys is they're knife makers. So they're knife makers making a grinder for knife makers. And,
nice.
I think it's very interesting. So hopefully they're going to come up with Chris in the next couple of weeks, and I'll give you a whole report.
Nice.
Yeah, nice.
I saw you had some forks on your Instagram the other day.
Ah, yes. I had a I'm getting a lot of repeat business, which I like. Like old guys, like guys who bought stuff from me like years ago. And that's when you start to feel like, all right, maybe this isn't just like a flash in the pan thing. Mm. So I've been getting, you know, because I do use a lot of the G10, you can, you know, and the G10 doesn't really change color. I mean, royal blue is royal blue, no matter when you buy it. It's easier to do, sets. So a lot of times a guy will, you know, this guy is a Knicks fan, a New York Knicks fan. He wanted blue and orange. And he said, I need a, you know, he'd been talking to us about, you know, paring knife, oyster knife and forks. And I did a couple forks a while ago, and they're fun to do, especially plate quenching. You can cut them out and take a little bit of the material away and keep the flats flat. And then for plate quenching, it's, you know, pretty easy. There's not a lot of, you know, fooling around with the warping and stuff like that. So it was a lot of fun, and we're going to do it again. And then we actually just put them on the website. So I had another customer of mine just bought two more, and, you know, they're fun to change it up a little bit. The forks are, you know, forks are fun. So
corner the fork market.
Well, I mean, you know, it's there, you know, a lot of people make them, and they're, I honestly don't use them. I know that nowadays a lot of guys who are using serving forks are using them for plating pasta. That's what, I guess there's this famous one from Wusthof or something. They're super long tines. Like they go, they go straight to the, from the handle. And a lot of chefs now are using that for plating pasta. So we'll see what happens with that. Nice. How are you? What's going on with you, Mareko? You moved. How are you?
Oh my God. Yeah. Moved again. but this is into a, it's still in the same city, same town, everything, just different house. And, so we just moved into a place of our own, which is really nice. And it's, we're still getting comfortable and settled in. And, you know, moving sucks. I hate moving.
Worst.
And it's the worst. I was doing the tally the other day, and I think we've moved 5 times in the last 5 years. And, and I think 4 of those moves have just been in the last 3.5 years. So that's good to be, I think we're going to be here for a while. We don't have any plans to move for a long time now. But the house is just a mess. It's like our storage unit just blew up into this house. And so, so that's fun. Working that out. I just finished up actually a knife last week, and got it sent out. It had a, actually the customer came and picked it up. Which doesn't happen very often. And I think I've only actually met maybe 5 or 6 of my actual customers. Anyhow, it was a really neat build. It had a elk antler as a spacer in the handle, and it's a Japanese cowboy handle. And then the body of the handle was maple, spalted maple barrel. I actually did kind of like a kind of a follow along on my Instagram stories, which it's in my highlights now. Of how I kind of approached the sculpting for that. And so I was really happy with how that came together. Otherwise, it's just kind of the usual back to the grind, starting another project and making more steel, forging out another blade. And I have some pictures I'm going to post up of kind of like the start to finish of a mosaic Damascus chef's knife where I have my little tile stack, which is, I call a little micro billet. Because it's only a very small, it's like a normal Damascus billet layup after you cut and restack them, but they're only, instead of being like, you know, 3 or 4 or 6 inches long, they're only maybe 3/4 or 7/8 of an inch long. So it goes from that and then to like the finished forged blade. Just to, I love your contrast thing that you do on your Instagram, Jeff, with your handles where it's all glucked up and nasty and glued up, and then boom, it's all shiny and, and glossy and everything. That's so fun. I thought it would be interesting to kind of show like this, you know, the kind of jump cut start to finish of
people
that.
Some people don't like it when I do that.
Well, they can shut up.
It's fine by me, but it's, they don't like how sloppy. They're like, why do you put so much fucking glue on there? What's the matter with you? I'm like, this is the transformation, you motherfucker. Come on, man. This is like, you know, don't worry about it. This is not for you. We're going to talk about that in our beefs.
Sure. So but that's about it. That's basically it.
Did you move into your new garage, the shop? Are you changing shops, or are you going to stick with
the shop's going to stay where the shop's at. The garage, it's not far. It's maybe a 10-15 minute drive.
Oh, good.
Oh, yeah. Nice. It was about half an hour before, but it's not.
Oh, it's much better.
Yeah. So yeah, that's good.
Craig,
we only talked about your birthday. Yeah, what have you actually been up to?
table knives this week. So, an order of 40, which I've been working on for quite some time. And just shaping the handles this week. So, the tail end of last week, we were doing the glue-ups, so it was a case of laying out. I mean, there was 40, and they're all, obviously, you get two sides to your handles. We had 80 slabs of this walnut, stabilized walnut, and it's beautiful stuff, but all really highly figured. So it took us a long time to match them up, so we had, you know, two similar for each knife. So the glue-up was done, and now I'm on the shaping of the handles. And I just had the worst time of it. Those first couple of knives, I just, you know, sometimes you just can't get into a groove and you just, nothing seems to work. But yeah, it was just a case of going away, have something to eat and come back an hour later with a fresh mind on it and literally take things from a different angle. And I was just zipping through them and yeah, just really happy. Oh, nice. So they're all shaped now. It's down to the polishing and the sharpening and the final bits and pieces. But yeah, I'll be glad to see this order gone, actually. It's I've done quite a few recently of walnut and brass. And it just seems like I've been doing them forever because I think this is the third order in a row of this very similar knife, or regard to the handles at least, anyway. So yeah, it'll be nice to tackle something new after this.
It's a good look.
I never get sick of walnut. That's Sunset's favorite combination. It's
a classic. It's nice. Yeah.
It never gets old for me. I love walnut and brass. I love it.
Yeah. Yeah. Aside from that, so this sustainable knife campaign that I sort of started a couple of months ago, you know, trying to work out how I could make the most sustainable chef knife. Well, I sold 30 on a newsletter to previous customers. I do this sort of newsletter where I have different segments. So I have a segment for previous customers. I have a segment for people interested in the sustainable knife. And I have a segment just for people who just sign up on the website. So I'm trying this thing, when I'm trying to do a sort of pipeline of things. So I sold 30 previously, and that was before I fully sort of decided how it was going to be, these sustainable knives were going to be. So those 30 have gone. So now on January the 31st, I'm doing that same knife to a different list. So this is a list to anybody who's on the sustainable knife list or just general customers from the website. And the whole idea is there'll be 100 of them because I only have enough material to make 100. And hopefully that should keep me busy for months and months and months to come, getting these chef knives done. So it's been real fun, actually, just learning about, how I can make this more sustainable. So we've switched energy supplier here. So all the energy to the shop now is green energy coming from either water or wind. Little things that I'm using Perspex for liners. So I'm getting all that scrap from a local sign writer who would only be putting this in the bin. So it's stuff that's not being made specifically for the knife. It's all these just little things that, you know, in my mind, I think is the most sustainable the knife could be, you know, at this quality. I mean, you can pick up scrap steel and make a knife out of, you know, 100% recycled stuff. This isn't going to be that. This is, you know, it's a known steel. So I'm using 14C28N. After speaking to Sandvik, I found out that they're nearly 80% recycled anyway at the plant,
sure,
which is really nice. So yeah, there's lots of facts and figures which I'll be sort of sharing over the next few weeks until these are launched. And it's just sort of building up interest in that, really. So yeah, it's going to be fun. And it's like a different way of sort of marketing something before they're ready. So yeah, we'll see how it goes. But I'm excited to get these walnut knives out of the way and start on these sustainable knives.
And are you looking forward to all the people saying, well, what about this? Isn't that sustainable? Are you looking forward to like bracing yourself for all that?
It's sort of started already, but I think if you put yourself out there, it's going to happen. And I'm comfortable myself knowing that this is the most sustainable I could make a knife, you know, to this standard. I say you could make it more sustainable, but I think maybe the quality would suffer. So this is, you know, the best quality that I could possibly do in the most sustainable way that I could. So I'm quite happy with the choices I've made.
Speaking of which, shout out to Jimmy Duresta and the Making It podcast. This reminds me of that. On their last episode, I think it's called Capital Letters Pivot. They gave us a little bit of a shout out. They're a great podcast, a maker podcast, and they were talking about knife making. And Jimmy mentioned us and talked about us, but the one thing he said was, and this is kind of like dovetails into what you were saying, is he says that when he makes knives, he was making the delineation between amateurs and professional. He goes, amateurs are the guys who fucking tell you, you're doing it wrong. You shouldn't be doing it. What are you wasting your time for? You're playing, you're fooling around. And he says, it's the professionals who are the nicest. They're the ones who are super helpful and they're not judgy. So that stuck out in my mind that Jimmy was just like, he's like, you have no idea. All these little guys, they're the ones who are like, they're bitch and moan. And I think he gets a lot of that, but it reminded me me to say something, because Jimmy's a good dude, and he's been super, super supportive of us. But it's funny you mentioned us. I think maybe we'll do something with them soon, huh?
It would be good to. It would be good to. I have reached out. But their last episode, as you just mentioned, it was very sort of knife-making heavy. I think the three of them, the three hosts, are getting more into sort of metalworking.
Well, it's hard not to get into knife-making. I mean, it's like if you're into making stuff, it's, you know, the whole concept of knife making is so fascinating, because you have something you can actually make that you can use, and it's, you know, for various reasons. It's great.
And every YouTube rabbit hole ends up at Alex Steele, no matter where you start. It's the rule.
Really?
It's the rule. If you just leave any YouTube video on to, you know, just play next, within five videos, you'll be watching Alex Steele, there's no doubt.
But, you know, one thing that Alex does, he's not instructional, though.
Hmm.
He like leaves it for, he just tells you, I'm doing this and I'm not giving you any notes. You know, he doesn't give you any help at all, Alec. You know what I'm saying? Like, you know, Jeremy from Simple Little Life and all these other guys, they'll tell you what they started with, but not Alec, boy. He's going to put his glasses on, be a big smile, you know, put his notes
slow-mo
to himself.
And flames. Slow-mo
yeah, he's
going to
put
flames.
His notes in his pocket and say, yo, fuck yourself. You figure it out for yourself. God bless Alec Steele.
So that's what we've been up to. Let's see if we've got any news.
All right. Knife Talk news. This is where we have the all sorts of what's going on in the knife world. And we're going to start off with Mareko Momasi, the master of the calendar. What's going on in the world? Well, I mean, you're the only one who knows what the hell's going on. Every time you're not here and I have to figure out what I leave your calendar in the back of the truck, and I'm like, hey, well, something's going on. So you got it in front of you. I never have it
yeah.
in front of me.
Well, I actually have the brand new Artisans of Steel calendar that is being kicked off, actually, with the legendary Mr. Nick Wheeler. Is the first month of January for this new calendar. It's a more standard layout. They're actually on my Instagram. They're on my website right now. We have limited quantities. We just sent out our first batch of calendars the other day. But coming up on the calendar, actually this week, starting Tuesday, is SHOT Show from the 21st to the 24th. And then following that on Friday and Saturday is the Las Vegas Custom Knife Show in Las Vegas, Nevada. Yeah. And that's basically what's happening for the second to last week of the month. So there's not much else happening this month. And then outside of the calendar, I just want to say, I don't know if we've really talked about it right on the show, but, you know, Australia basically is on fire, and it's really heartbreaking to see, you know, I see all kinds of stuff on my Instagram feed. They've lost innumerable animals to the brush fires, and also human lives as well. And Kevin Room, who is a custom knife maker down in Australia, he's actually doing an auction. And unfortunately, it just, as we're recording, it's ending today on Sunday. But it's going to benefit a family it was a husband-wife family, and the wife was pregnant, and the husband is a firefighter, and he was lost in the fires. And so I just want to give a shout out to Kevin. For his support to his countrymen, and my heart goes out to the wife who lost her husband, because I can't imagine how hard that is.
I'm under the impression that it's slowly it started to rain, and I think isn't it slowly being taken care of? I'm not 100% sure. But with that said, shout out to Steve Pellegrino. He put one of his knives up for auction, and the money went to that too. I talk to Mert every so often. Mert Tansu. I've been talking to him texting. He and I text in the mornings and stuff like that. And he was just very much along the lines of, we're going to get through this. And, you know, I think that there's a lot of, you know, we're going to get through this. And it's, as you said, I mean, what's more to say? It's terrible.
It's rough.
Terrible.
Terrible. Sorry. And sadly, it's going to be more and more common, I think. You know, it's, you know, what can we do? It's a difficult one. But yeah, heart goes out to anybody affected by any of those fires out there.
all these fires, especially in California, like the fire season up in Northern California, it's getting longer and it's terrible. Terrible. I have friends in San Francisco who can smell the fires when they're up in Northern California. It's crazy.
There you go. Not good at all. Not good.
Sad, sad.
I've got another sad story about... So last night, I'm sitting there with my wife, just watching the TV. It's a Saturday night, quite relaxed, and the phone pings. And I'm like, I generally try... When I'm in the evenings, I try to keep away from my phone. But what we were watching was garbage, and I picked up my phone. And it was one of our listeners messaged Knife Talk Podcast on Instagram, our account. And they said that they prefer another show. Their heart belongs to another show. This was like a stab through the heart. I got really, really sad. I just thought, we've got a community, what's going on? Right. I was really, really sad. So I did what most, self-respecting podcast owners would do. I pulled out the piano. And I thought, right, let's write a little song about this. We had a message this week from one of our flock that made us feel really low. Dominic Schwab admitted to us he prefers another show. Now we're not ones to bitch and moan and to publicly throw our rattle. But we'll fight for a flock whatever it takes, even a custody battle. Mert and Kev from that other show, we respect what you're doing. But stealing our listeners and making them smile could lead us all to ruin. So Dominic Schwab, if we're breaking up, it better be worth all the trouble. 'Cause the Aussie show is fun for a while, but really, really, really does it make you smile. And Dominic Schwab, are you listening today? We promise to be better and we'll listen all day. And Dominic Schwab and the Aussie crew, it's not us, it's you.
Wow.
I think Mert and the crew at the other podcast, I think we need to have some sort of custody thing going on here where we maybe our listeners, we can borrow from each other maybe.
Wow. I can't believe you wrote that to a rat leaving a sinking ship.
Exactly. A rat.
All right. That is customer service right there. That doesn't mean you're going to do that to everybody who fucking decides they don't want to listen to this podcast anymore, are you?
Definitely not. But we're going to fight for every listener. Any defectee who decides to go elsewhere, we're going to fight for you.
Wow. That was something else. I just, if you don't mind, I just don't want a radio war, if you don't mind.
It's a bit of fun. It's all fine.
I was involved in a radio war a number of years ago, and it almost ruined my friendship with my buddy Nico. It was bad. It got real bad. I had a podcast about 10 years ago called The Downward Spiral with my buddy Nico Tavernisi. And, we would talk about weird stories. And it was always like deteriorating into just like, nonsense. So that's why I called it The Downward Spiral. So a friend of mine decided that he listened to the podcast. He says, well, I'm going to do a podcast. If you can do a podcast, I can do a podcast. So he said, I'm going to do the antidote to your podcast. He came up with The Upward Spiral. It was terrible. I mean, it was the worst. It was so bad. He would read poetry and talk about philosophy, and it was like unlistenable. So I was just like, maybe we should do a little fake radio war. And, we'll break your balls, you'll break our balls, and then it'll be a little cross promotion. It was just like fooling around, So he didn't tell his partner, who is a comedian, and I just lit this dude up. I just said, he said, this podcast is terrible. I can't listen to this podcast. I said, you've got a guy who's a professional comedian. He can tell a joke or two. I started, next thing one of their listeners wrote Nico this horrendous letter. What kind of piece of shit you are, and who the fuck? And all of a sudden, I get this text from Nico saying, "I don't want to do this goddamn podcast anymore. I didn't sign up for this," and it turned into like this disaster area.
Oh,
and yeah, so Mert and Kev, I'm with you, because this is the funny thing: is a little backstory is. So I guess Dominic, who Schwab, were with you 100%. He made a story saying that he loves Knife Talk, or Knife Talk Down Under is what you should be called. You know, starting a war already. Knife Making Down Under. And he just said it's something like the long lines of it's better than the knife talk that talk. It's on
all. Yeah, better than the podcast where they talk about knives.
So,
yeah.
You know, Craig and I fool around on the thing, and I just sent him the crying emoji, and then I guess he wrote something back, and then Craig jumped on it. He's like, we're going to, you know, turn the whole thing. And then I guess somebody screen capped it and sent it to Kev. So all of a sudden Kev sneaks into my DMs. He's like, I hear we're going to start a radio war. I'm like, no. There's no radio war. We're all good. This is fine.
There's room for us all.
But I will say, Craig, that writing that song was great. You're a good songwriter.
Well, I was inspired by such a sad, sad story.
Oh, you wasn't like out of spite?
No.
Oh, no. All
right. No. All right.
Well, no. Congratulations on being a 1 year older and, you know, smarter.
Less wiser. Yeah. What other news have we got?
The New England School of Metalwork and the Center for Metal Arts both have new classes. Actually, the Center for Metal Arts, one of our listeners, Reed Schwartz, is going to be teaching knife forging for spoon knives. He makes beautiful.
I love his stuff.
Reed Schwartz is an awesome knife maker, and he makes those, you know, spoon carving knives. And he does these things where, you know, it's a short knife, very forged, and then he has like a kind of carved octagon short handle for spoon carving, and he does the, you know, all that stuff. But he also does these things called I guess he makes his sheaths out of wood too, so they're almost like they're these little, they lock in. And he is a dynamite guy. Listen to the podcast. Pardon me. And he's going to be teaching at the Center for Metal Arts. And I think there's some slots available. And then...
Listens to our podcast or that other podcast?
Pardon me?
He listens to our podcast
He
or
listens
that
to our podcast.
Podcast.
He don't listen, okay, to, he's, you know, cool. He he's don't cool. listen to those Australians. He don't listen to those Australians. He's a New England guy. You know, don't worry about him. And then... The New England School of Metalworks also has new classes coming out, and they're pumping out some really cool classes, and definitely worth checking them all out. I would, that's for sure. 100%.
And what's that? NewEnglandSchoolOfMetal.com, is it? Where would they find
that? Something like
that.
You can follow them on Instagram, New England School of Metalwork and the Center for Metal Arts. Both are on Instagram. But like, you know, I know that they just posted some pictures of some of our listeners. I know Direct Metalworks and then one of our other guys are taking classes with Nick. And, you know, pardon me, I'm still getting over this goddamn flu. And it's just great to seeing them, you know, making it happen.
Cool.
And in funsy news, this is weird funsy news. I guess that's what you call it, funsy news. I got sent this by Sean McKesney, Noah Vachon, Jeremy Spake. They sent me this story that was big in the news. I mean, I'm sure you guys even saw it. Everyone was posting it. A man requests trial by combat with Japanese swords to settle a custody battle with his ex-wife.
Oh,
all right. And this is in Des Moines. A Kansas man has asked an Iowa court to grant his motion for trial by combat so he can meet his ex-wife and her attorney, quote, on the field of battle where he will rend their souls from their corporal bodies. David Ostrom, 40, of Kansas, claims in the court documents that his ex-wife, Bridget, 38, has destroyed him legally. He asked the Iowa District Court in Shelby County to give him 12 weeks lead time in order to source or forge a katana or wakizashi sword. And then he says, to this day, trial by combat has never been explicitly banned or restricted. It is a right of the United States. Ostrom argues that in court records, adding that it was used as recently as 1880 in British courts. When reached on by phone, Ostrom told the Des Moines Register that he got the idea after learning about it. Let's just keep going here. Ostrom said the motion stemmed from his frustration with his ex-wife's attorney. I think I've met Mr. Hudson's absurdity with my own absurdity. I think they're all basically... So Ostrom said he plans to request the same mediation tactic for any other disputes that may arise in court. And he added that his ex-wife can choose her attorney as her champion or stand-in fighter. Jesus. Yeah, so this guy has decided that his life has been ruined and he wants revenge by chopping up his wife with a sword or her attorney. What do you think about this, guys?
What a crazy world we live in. I hope we don't have to start doing this with our listeners who defect to other podcasts, that we need some sort of custody battle with Japanese swords.
Let's keep singing songs, Craig, and in regards to this, just keep writing songs. No, we know no need for hostilities.
Oh, can you imagine? This guy's obviously got beef with the lawyers and stuff, which is fair enough. But you know, Japanese swords—that's just crazy.
Well, the funny thing is it's very clear, and everyone says this guy's crazy. It's very clear that this is not his first bad idea. I think we're dealing with people who make poor judgments on a regular basis. This is not his first poor judgment. I mean, some of these people, they watch, I'm convinced you all watch too much, I'm blaming everybody. You're all watching too many violent movies, you're watching too much TV, and you're coming up with these fantasies that are horrendous. I could not imagine taking something and hurting somebody with such a vicious, in a vicious way. You're going to go hit somebody with a sword, a lawyer with a sword. That you don't really know. That's crazy. I can imagine the psychological trauma that you'd have by causing vicious, vicious violence. Just, this guy makes bad decisions. He obviously was not a very good husband because this can't, he couldn't have been the best husband and then come up with this out of the end. Right?
Yeah.
I mean, who comes up with that thing? Why would you even think? And this is the same kind of guys who say, you don't have to pay your taxes. And yeah, I know that this is. They come up with these cockamamie ideas thinking that I've outsmarted them all now. And now they're making jokes about this dude. And now all the knife guys are just like, hey, maybe we can be in business and sell this guy a couple swords. Get the fuck out of here. It's annoying. It's a stupid. This guy makes bad decisions. People make bad decisions.
Well, it's crazy. He sounds like the kind of person who's like, I wish I could. It was legal to kill my wife, basically, is what he's trying to say.
Basically,
and he's trying to go about it the most legal way he thinks he can come up with by getting a judge to approve it. It doesn't make sense.
It sounds like some really bad straight-to-TV film that was made in the like early 90s.
You're talking about a guy who makes bad decisions. This is not a good decision, dude. This isn't like, let's cut our losses. I'm willing to kill my wife or her lawyer. How could you live like that? And how could you think that that's a good idea? Why even go about it? This guy makes bad decisions and you watch it too much TV. Kansas guy with a Japanese sword. What the fuck's the matter with you? Why don't you go fishing or something? Live your life. Why do some yoga? Jesus. I mean, am I wrong? Don't you think you need a better hot yoga?
He needs some fucking hot yoga.
You know what? That's what this guy should do. Here's what I would do if I was this guy. Fucking start over from scratch. Get yourself in good shape. Get yourself a new girlfriend. Change your mind. Change your attitude. And show revenge by living a good life. And see.
There we go.
Deceive. All right. There you go. That's it.
There we go. Moving on.
I bet abrasives make the world's best abrasive belts for knife makers, available in any size and at unbelievable prices. Go take a look at combatabrasives.com and get 15% off with the promo code KNIFETALK15. Do it now!
KNIFETALK15. 15% off anything at Combat Abrasives. So go take a look at combatabrasives.com. Now, one thing you're going to need abrasives for is our build-along, which we've been sort of talking about over the last few weeks, but haven't really got into anything. So I think this should be our first week of a build along. I've been giving this lots of thought of how can we get, you know, complete newcomers to, you know, to come and build knives, and how can we get, you know, experienced knife makers involved as well. So I thought let's start with something simple. So this first week, we'll talk about how you design knives, how you go about getting your shape and all the rest of it. So we've got a new sponsor, and they're called KnifePrint.com. And I've talked about how I design knives in the past. I use basically a 2D CAD program. So it's a program where you can plot the shape of the knife, and then you can print it out to paper or whatever you want to print it out to, and you know, transfer that to steel and cut around it and all the rest of it. But KnifePrint have this great service. So you can do all that. You can go online, you can design your knife, and it's super, super simple. So I've actually made a video over the last couple of days, which will be live today. The day you hear this is Monday. That'll be live on my YouTube, showing how I've designed this knife, which we can use for the build along. There's a link in the description. There'll also be a link in this podcast description. Go into KnifePrint.com, and what that will do, it will open up KnifePrint with a copy of the knife that I've designed. So you can go straight to print to paper, and you can have a printed copy, or you could make amends, maybe some slight amends to the knife if you don't like the design of it. So I've gone with a very sort of traditional sort of hunting knife, I suppose, very sort of general purpose hunting knife, because I thought let's go something with a thicker stock than maybe a chef knife, because I think if it's your first knife, maybe a chef knife isn't what you want to be doing. So I've gone for something with a thicker stock, so around about 4 millimeters would probably be fine for this, which is, what's that? It's
no
in
idea.
In your American language, what's 4 mil?
I have no idea.
Hurt us, near me.
I'm out.
It's about a quarter of an inch.
There we go, about a quarter of an inch. So the whole idea is this is a knife that we can all do over the next couple of weeks. And if we share the hashtag KnifeTalkBA for Build Along, we can all see different versions of the same knife. So take a look at the description. There'll be a link, and that'll take you to KnifePrint.com, where you can see this knife. You can print out to paper, but they also have this incredible service where you can print the knife actually in steel, and they'll cut it out for you with a laser, and they'll post it to you within sort of, you know, 7 to 10 days. And it's super, super cheap. So if you've got knives that you want to maybe prototype, or you just want to start maybe designing knives, you know, on a computer, which is the way I always do it, because then, you know, your measurements are always perfect, that kind of thing. You can go to KnifePrint.com. It's completely free to use. You can print to paper, and it's completely free to, you know, save your designs, that kind of thing. But they do have a pro account, and with a pro account, you can do a few different things. Like you can bring in a picture, maybe you want to trace a picture of a knife that you've already seen, that kind of thing. And if you use KnifeTalk10, you'll get 10% off that. But I said the free one, you can do a lot with the free account anyway. But if you're doing the Knife Talk build along with us, take a look. You can see the design that I've got. It would be nice to see maybe a couple of you make some slight changes to it as well, so we can see some variations. But if you want that blank cutout in steel, we've got a discount for you as well. So you can get 35% off when you go to checkout if you use Knife Talk BA. So that means you'll be able to get one of these blanks, and I think it's under $10. And then you can come along and you can do the build along with us. So each week we're gonna have a different stage. So check out my video, which I'll put on YouTube today, which shows how I've gone about designing the knife. As I say, it's a very sort of traditional, so I sort of suppose it's like a bushcraft kind of knife, really. I've chosen it in a 01 steel because when it comes to heat treating in next week or maybe the week after, it'll be super simple to do that for all of us. And I've chosen a 4 millimeter thickness. But it's up to you. It'd be nice to see some variations. So hopefully we're going to get lots of people doing this build along. Each week we're going to feature a different stage. So next week we'll probably be talking about heat treat. I think that would probably be the next logical step once we've got our basic shape.
Here's where people are going to be like,
such a cool idea.
You know, but you should grind them first.
Oh my God.
This is going to be a lot of that.
There's going to be a lot of that. And I think if you just want to, you know, print this out on paper, transfer it to steel and cut it out, whether you're using a right angle grinder, whether you've got a steel bandsaw, wherever it is, don't grind any bevels or anything yet. Maybe drill your holes for your pins or whatever, whichever way you're going to attach this handle. And as it next week, we will be talking about heat treat. Being a bushcraft knife, it's probably going to have that sort of Scandi grind to it, as opposed to, you know, a full grind which goes right up to the spine. So personally, and I don't know about you guys, personally, I'd always just heat treat this and then do all of the grinding afterwards. I mean, what would you do?
I ran the. I just looked at my little converter thing, and I said almost a quarter of an inch, but it's actually just it's under 3/16 and just over 5/32, if that helps anybody.
Right. But I mean, but that's just the one I'm doing. I'm doing a 4mm, and you can get a discount on that particular design that I've just talked about. And again, it's all going to be in the description of the podcast and on the video.
Well, and I think at that thickness, it's reasonable to just heat treat it at full thickness and then grind it. Mm. I don't think that's terrible.
No, especially if it's a Scandi grind. Reasonable.
Yeah, and I think at every single stage of this, people will have different opinions. But the whole purpose of this is that we'll talk at sort of a complete newcomer to knife making through it. So the first step really is getting your blank. So that, as I said, there's two ways of doing it. You can either go to the link in the description and just order a blank, and that, you know, that's a good start. Or you can go to the link in the description, print it out to paper, transfer it to some stock steel, and cut it out in whichever way. And I mean, this isn't really the technical bit. This is the easy bit. This is just getting your shape.
Sure.
I say it would be really nice to see people, you know, making slight amendments to the shape and you know, having little variations and so on. And you can do that in KnifePrint, and you can save it as your own template and as your own default and so on. So go and take a look. I originally learned about KnifePrint because the very first grinder I bought was probably 4 or 5 years ago, the first 2x72 rather, and it was built in Greece by this guy. And I know a lot of people have got this grinder, but this is actually his son. His son set up KnifePrint, so he's doing a computer science degree, and he was just like, "Well, what can I make?" And also, my dad's got this big workshop. You know, how could I, you know, use the two together and make some money? So he set up KnifePrint. It's a really nice, cool program to go online and just design. There's loads and loads of helpful videos to show. If you've never done it before, if you've never used like a CAD program before, you don't need to install anything. It's all in the browser. Super, super simple. And they've got so they're based in Greece. So if you're in Europe and you order one of the blanks, it'll come directly from them. But if you're in the US, they've also got a partner over there. So they're laser cutting blanks out in the US as well. So it'll be posted from there. So it's a super fast service. Super cool. Yeah, so go That's check them out at KnifePrint.com, and it's going to be really good to start seeing stuff appearing on social networks with KnifeTalkBA as a hashtag, and it'd just be really cool to see you guys build along with us, and hopefully, you know, within a few weeks, we'll all have these cool knives, these bushcraft knives.
It sounds like a really interesting opportunity for, I mean, it sounds like what you're basically doing is a remote knife-making course. So, you know, if somebody like myself, like I don't have the room in my shop really to invite people in and teach them a course on knife making, but it could be a way that you say, all right, you're going to go here, you're going to print out this knife, and then you provide kind of a video tutorial and walk people through, which is basically what you're doing, right?
Yeah. So I'm going to do a video each week. And this first week is all about the design. You know, why I've chosen this specific design and how I go about that. So whether you're doing the build along or not, if you've never used any sort of 2D CAD program, this is a really handy way to get into it. It's super, super simple.
Yeah, super
Are you cool. going to wear your Knife Talk t-shirt while you build it? I see this YouTube video being on par with all the great beginner Knife Talk videos. I hope that you're going to be wearing your Knife Talk t-shirt.
I'm not. It's already been recorded. Plain black all the way. Plain black. All right.
Oh, you Let's didn't do it shirtless?
maybe next week. once the weather warms up a little bit.
Does that cost extra?
You got to sing a song. There needs to be, here we are building a knife together, you fuckers, you little bastards. Here
Bring
we go.
Bring a little piano into the workshop. Yeah, I don't think so.
No. All right. Well, I think this is great. Congratulations.
No, it's time to
print your fucking knife today, because you stupid bastard. All right, congratulations! No, this is great. You know, I know a lot of other podcasts do like podcasts do like. I know Blacksmith's Pub did a spoon build together, and it'll be fun to. Congratulations, and I'm in. I'll participate too. Usually, I don't like to participate in anything. You have sold me. You've sold me on participating. I will for sure participate.
It's going to be cool. And hopefully we'll learn from each other as well, because there's more than one way to, you know, to, what's the phrase? There's more
skin
than one way to skin a cat. That's the one. So, yeah, I'm sure we're going to have some people say, why are you doing it that way? And all the rest of it. So, well, show us your way. Maybe we'll learn as well.
Pardon me.
Hey, man, can I ask you a question?
Hey, man, can I ask you a question? This is the time of the podcast where you, the listener, steer the boat. So we, if you go to Knife Talk Podcast on Instagram, you can DM us your questions, and then we'll do our best to, you know, answer them or, you know, ridicule them. One thing I will say is I had a lot of this last week. The when you write your questions to us, and I'm, this is me, this is Jeff Fader, not Knife Talk, the management of Knife Talk. You try, before you press send, reading it out loud and seeing if it makes sense, because I've gotten a few questions and I ended up having to edit them, which is not a big deal, but some of them are just like, well, I thought you understood. And I said, what are you talking about? What do you mean? And they're like, well, don't you understand? I'm like, if I read it and it doesn't make sense, then you, the listener, aren't going to understand it either. So edit yourself, read it out before you press send, and we'll do our best to put it in. So being a dick, there I am. So first question comes from Kyle Pastrell. This one is for Mareko for sure. When setting up a mosaic billet in a tile fashion to reveal your desired surface pattern, which direction of force is applied to set the forge weld? And then he writes underneath, he said, Salem Straub recently showed how he sets up his tiles with a 30-degree angle cut, so they all line up, and I can't figure out which way they would need to be pressed so the welds would stick.
So what he's talking about is, so say you forge out your mosaic bar, you have it now in, say, a 3/4 inch by 1.5 inch cross-sectional dimension, and it's however long. So he's talking about what Salem typically does is he'll cut the tiles off at an angle, and then what used to be the end grain of the bar then gets flipped up to become part of the face of the bar. So each one of the angle, the tiles that are cut at an angle overlap each other just a little bit. Basically, it's a lap weld, I think, is in blacksmithing, they call that. And then you usually at least tack them, if not wrap the entire joint with some sort of weld. And the trick with that is prep. You got to get them super clean and as high, you know, you don't have to really go past 220, but as high of a finish as you can get, the better, because the cleaner those surfaces are when they come together and they actually get under heat and pressure, the easier they will weld together. So you don't really want to, you know, finish things out at 36 grit or something like that. And then when it comes to what direction to put the force, once you get the billet laid out together, it's going to essentially replicate a bar, except for it's been cut into several tiles and then the pattern revealed on the face. So you gently, you kind of just gently massage the steel. Now, something that people often do is they'll add sacrificial steel. So that means they'll actually on the top and bottom of the newly created billet, they'll add mild steel. And that acts as a brace to kind of help hold things together and keep things where they should be, so that as you're forging, they don't just start falling apart and coming apart. Sure. Especially the first time I ever did a mosaic tile weld, that was exactly what I did. And then what you do is you just go back and you just grind the mild steel off. And then underneath you have, ideally, is everything has gone perfectly. You have very clean mosaic Damascus welds. And but again, you want to definitely thoroughly bring it up to temperature, up to like welding temperature, which is around like 2000 degrees. And you want to let it soak for a few minutes, like, you know, two or three, 5 minutes, something like that. Doesn't have to be forever, before gently squishing it. And when I say, especially if you're using a hydraulic press, you know, maybe that's a 1/16 of an inch or 1/8 of an inch compression. I would err on the 16th of an inch side, because like I say, you want to just kind of massage it, at least those first couple rounds, because that's where things can easily just get torn right back apart. So you you might even be able, if you have a good clean hammer face and you're not only have good clean hand hammer face, but are good at hitting with your hand hammer, because it's easy to hit off and catch an edge or something with your hammer. And if you're doing that, you don't want to do this, but you could kind of tap it around and set it by hand in a way. Now the way that I've started doing my mosaic Damascus billets, like I was describing earlier, is I make a micro billet and I cut them, the pieces of the mosaic billet so that they stack up like a normal Damascus restack. But the problem is, or not the problem is, but what the difference is that they're, instead of, again, like 3 inches being 3 inch long pieces, they're only about 7/8 or 3/4 of an inch. And so I stack them up 4 or 5 high, and then I have my little micro billet, and then I slowly and gently, and the weld joints are flat. And I do clean them up to a pretty good high finish. I usually take those to about 120. But it wouldn't hurt to just take it, jump one more belt to 220. But anyways, I wrap those in TIG weld. And then I bring them up to temperature, let them soak for, again, like 5 minutes in my forge. And then I put them under my press, and I do it probably at least a solid 1/4 inch compression. Because especially on a taller billet like that, or that much height, it's easy for the force to not necessarily transfer all the way down to the middle. So I usually go for at least 1/4 of an inch, maybe 3/8 of an inch in reduction in height, just to make sure that force from the press transfers all the way through the height of the billet. The reason you don't do that on the other billet is because it's only maybe 3/4 of an inch thick. So you don't need that much reduction to encourage those lap welds to stick together. But for this butt welded, basically butt welded steel, I'll continue doing that for 2 or 3 rounds of welding, until I've effectively reduced my height by 30 to 40%. So, you know, if I'm starting at, say the stack is 3.5 inches tall, I'll reduce it down to about 2.5 inches. And then once I feel really good about, and it's just a feeling more than anything based off my own experience. Once I feel good about the welds and I feel like everything's good and solid, then I very gently start stretching it back out. So I call it the compress and stretch, but essentially it's butt welded steel that you compress to weld and then you stretch it back out. And I've been successfully welding and forging mosaic Damascus blades like that for the last 5 years. And so if anybody's got any problems with it, you're welcome to take it up with me. But that's what I got. So if anybody's got any follow-up questions, feel free to send the questions. But without it taking forever and doing an entire dissertation, that's the basic ideas.
There you
for
go,
that
Kyle.
First question.
There you go, Kyle. Get your money's worth on that one. Get your money. press rewind and listen to it a couple more times.
Yeah. Should just isolate that one and put that out as an EDC.
Just hit your... Yeah. There you go. There you go. Not a bad idea.
All right. This next question comes from Josh Scott, our buddy. He says, KTP, are IR infrared welding glasses necessary when forge welding or forging in general? Sometimes I see dudes wear them, and most of the time, not. Ching, ching. Just got knife. When I'm forge welding, I don't wear any special eye protection, but I'm also not sitting there staring into the fire. Now, if you're sitting there staring into the fire a lot, you might want to consider it. But I don't know. Jeff, do you have a pair?
I only use those glasses for when I'm using my torch. I can't. Sure. I spent so many years with oxyacetylene torches. I can't not have glasses on when I'm using a torch.
It's so bright. I don't even know how you could even see what you're doing. No,
I know guys who do it and just like, I used to do so much steel sculpture with a torch that I had 3 different pairs, and I like them. They're great. They really sure. take the stress off your eyes.
Yeah.
Now, Josh, we all know you have big googly eyes, so you might be the, you know, canary in the coal mine on this one. In regards to you, what I would suggest for your eyes is I would go to the welding store, get one of those big ass blankets that protect everybody, and just wrap that around your head. Because you might, it might be better. Because I don't think they're going to find any IR glasses that are big enough for your big googly eyes. Yes, the answer is yes. For your big eyes, go get some glasses.
There we go. Caps Cutlery has asked, "Hey man, can I ask you a question? I'm a part-time maker that just received an order for 55 paring knives from a local winery to give as gifts to their clients. Can you guys walk me through your batch process philosophy? He wants to be as efficient as possible, and the largest single order he's done so far is just 6 of the same knife. So he's hoping we can help. He says, great for the thanks for the great info and all the laughs on the show. So what do you guys do when you've got batches? I mean, this guy's got 55 paring knives to make. Have you got any sort of strategy for that?"
Well, you're working on 40 right now. What do you do?
Well, if it's a shape that I've never done before, I'll generally complete one knife from beginning to end and make notes of my process. If it's a shape that I've done before, I can generally just start doing batches. But once I've done that initial knife and I'm happy with the way things have gone, I'll then take the rest of all the knives and just completely do them in stages. So do all the cutouts and all the in one stage, then do all of the holes, drilled holes in one stage, all of the heat treat in one stage, and so on. Because that way you're not setting up machines all the time going back and forth, you know. You know, for example, I'll put one drill bit in and I'll go through all. So I do, in this case, it'd be 54 knives to do because I've already completed that one knife. So yeah, I do in each stage, I just complete every knife per stage. So as I say, that could be the heat treat, it could be the grinding, whatever it is, go through them all and you just keep repeating this action. And I found that everything gets so much better and tighter. So my grinding got so much better just because I'm dedicating, you know, to do 40, 60, 80 knives all at once. And you're going to get everything being identical because, you know, the setup is the same each time. You don't have to keep going back, wasting time. And even things like changing drill bits all the time, you don't need to do any of that. So just give yourself a goal by the end of the day. I want to get all of these knives to this stage and then work out what the next stage is going to be. But yeah, if it's a shape you've never done before, I always like to do the complete thing because I've been stung before where I'm working in batches and I'm going, they all get to a certain stage, then I realize every one of them is wrong. You know, so make sure you do that one knife that you're very happy with before you commit to doing everything else in batches.
Working in a kitchen and working in a metal shop is almost the exact same thing because you're not starting, you know, everything is the prep. Everything is the prep. And when I was in, when I was at the restaurant Oriole, that was doing the prep and it was everything was one stage. And it's the same thing when I was in, we were making railings. Every stage we were forging, you know, forging a point, you know, we'd do 1,000 points and then we'd do 1,000, you know, neck the, we were doing giant, you know, leaf pickets. So first stage was the point. So I do 1,000 points, then neck everything 1,000 times, then start using the, you know, flat. If you break everything down as the smallest stage possible, you will get the same, you will get super close. But if you start jumping away, you know, what happens is you end up getting farther and farther away from being identical. And this also might be one of those things where they might want a little bit of that handmade, you know, like it was made by a person, you know, everyone's a little bit different. But if you want to go, you know, exact tight, break, as Craig was saying, but break all your stages down into the tiniest of details.
Cool.
Yeah.
What about you, Mareko? Do you do many sort of big sets or is it always just one-offs?
I mean, most of my custom stuff is all, I focus one at a time. I found before, I used to do batches, but when, but those were, especially when I first started out, those were knives that were going to retailers. So they didn't really have any specific, design elements that I need to be following or or that's been requested by a customer. But once I started taking more and more customer requests, I found that I had to slow down and just focus on one at a time. Otherwise, it was easy to forget where I was at or get distracted by something else or whatever, you know. Forget about a knife in the acid or whatever. But this, you know, when I did the Smith and Bard's set, it started as a 10 knife set, or batch of knives. And then I focused on just five. And for me, it was about trying to identify the bottlenecks where things are really going to slow down. And for me, a major one is heat treat, just because of the time it takes for tempering and how much space there is in my oven to do the whole hardening and tempering process. So that's when we just pared it down to five. And also, I know my own body physiologically, and I know that it especially any the finish grinding work and the handle sculpting work was going to be really hard on me, and I knew that I really couldn't do more than five really at one time. Otherwise, it's just way too much standing at the grinder for me, and it destroys my body. So that was another thing that really helped me, like inform me on how to break it up. But otherwise, there are things that are not as hard on the body. You know, cutting out profiles, drilling a hole. Like, I just did everything all at once. But once it came to those other things that require more time or take a larger toll, that's when I started breaking it up into smaller batches from there.
You made a very good point about the heat treating, and this is one thing that Cap Cutlery, be very, very, you know, efficiency is super important, but like when it comes to the heat treatment, don't put 10 knives in and expect your heat treating on them all to be. I broke it down to the point where I was like, all right, this week I'm going to be heat treating this pile, and I'm going to do, you know, three knives per session, just because every time you open that door, the temperature changes. So when you get to the last one, it isn't going to be as hot as the first one. So you might have irregularity. So I think when you start to do 10 at a time, unless you have a system down, the heat treating and the tempering, you can shove everything in, and you know, the tempering isn't as big of a deal. You can put like 10 or 15 in at a time. But when it comes to that heat treating, I think that that's one of the big things that people don't realize is if you're trying to be as efficient as possible, but if you just shove too many knives in there, your oil is going to get too hot, or you're going to lose heat on that last knife, or it's not going to be the same results. And that's the one thing I would be very, very take your time on. And it's not worth the fooling around with, because you can't, you know, if you screw up the heat treatment, the whole problem is a problem.
Yeah. So if you're doing oil quenching, I mean, what you can do is split that into batches, so you're not always using the same oil. And again, plate quenching, get a bunch of plates, so you're not just heating up all the time. You just put fresh plates in. But yeah, Jeff's right. As soon as you start opening that door, you're going to lose a lot of heat. So I generally do about sort of seven maximum at once. And everybody's going to be slightly different, but it's all about just process and just, you know, if it's batches, to me, the most important thing is make sure you finish that one knife first and make sure you make a note of these processes. Because otherwise, if you just go into it blind, you could find yourself with 55 knives at a certain stage and you can't proceed any further because maybe you can make one simple error using the wrong size drill bit for your pins, for example, and all of a sudden all 55 blanks are gone. So, yeah, just be very careful. I'd always make sure you do that, complete that one before rolling out, that sort of batch process to the rest of the knives.
And P.S., I like a laser thermometer so I can see what the temperature of my oil is. Because if you run too many, you know, if your oil is running past where it's supposed to be running, you got a problem too. And you can't just feel it with your hand and say, all right, I'm in there. That's been a huge thing for me, is making sure, because I'm cold right now in my shop. And I know that when I'm running everything, the oil in my shop is whatever the temperature of the shop is, and it could be 50 degrees. So I know that I'm not working within the right temperature of what it's supposed to be. So I have a laser thermometer, and I put it in there, and I can take a piece of steel, put it in the forge or whatever, and warm it up. I can have a better temperature gauge in regards to where I should be. That's something too.
Yeah, and a bit of a tip with that as well, actually, is if you're using one of those laser thermometers, make sure you're not doing it in bright light, because that oil will just reflect and you won't get an accurate reading. So make sure it's pretty dark so that the reflection is at a minimum and you get more of an accurate sort of reading on that as well.
And you know what? Cap cutlery, when you're making these, you're probably going to need some sandpaper. So here's what I'm going to tell you. Indasi USA makes RhinoWet. If you're doing those 50, get the right sandpaper, spend some time. You spend less time fooling around and be more efficient. RhinoWet from Indasi USA is awesome sandpaper. It's better than all. It's better that for, it's made for knife. It's made for metalworking. And that's huge. That's in terms of your efficiency, use the RhinoWet. And what you can do is if you go to Texas Farrier Supply and use promo code KNIFETALK10, you get 10% off your RhinoWet or the other knife making supplies and blacksmithing supplies that they have at Texas Farrier Supply. My suggestion is if you say, oh, I don't know, you guys talk about the RhinoWet all the time, go get yourself a pack of 220 RhinoWet and tell me what you think. It's dynamite stuff. I don't know anybody who says that this stuff sucks. It's great. And DOS USA makes great products. They also have other things. They have really great masking tape, believe it or not. This tape they sent me for like pinstriping is incredible. And they make other stuff. They're great. And Texas Farrier Supply, Knife Talk 10.
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, Jeff just said it, but basically it's going to save you money and save you time with RhinoWet. The three of us use it. And go get it, Texas Farrier Supply.
All right. This next question comes from Northern Edge Custom Blades. It says, hey, man, wondering if you've ever added a Hamon to 1084. I have a customer asking for a shelf knife with a Hamon.
I think he meant chef knife. I don't know what a shelf knife is. It's for your fucking shelf.
You got to edit yourselves because I'm not smart about reading off.
No, you're fine. Guys, you got to.
I'll read whatever I'm wrong, Burgundy, and I'll read basically anything you put in front of me.
All right. Well, I'm going to remember that next time I put the questions up. I'm going to throw a couple of whammies your way.
I'm sure you will. I have a customer asking for a chef knife with a Hamon, and I'm looking for some tips and tricks. Thanks. What do you guys got?
I don't fuck with Hamons.
I've never done a Hamon.
I've done a couple of them, and I'm just like, ugh, I'm not ready. I don't need this in my life. It's too much.
Yeah, so it comes down for the 1084. I have 1084 that has a low manganese content. Manganese is one of the alloying elements that you find in a lot of steels, and mostly, especially in quote-unquote higher quantities, it helps make the knife more easily hardenable. That's just why steels like 1080 and 1075 and 1084 and Crewforge V, and a lot of steels are very heat treating friendly. It's because you have a very wide range within to quench that knife. Now, that makes it easier to harden a knife, but it makes it harder to create a Hamon because a Hamon relies on a shallower hardening steel, basically the lack of that manganese content. And 1084, a lot of these chemical compositions in these steels, they vary quite a lot. They have kind of like a buffer zone for a lot of them, that because different manufacturers are making the same recipe. But when you go from one mill to another, they do things just a little different. It's not going to be exactly the same. And so they have a range within which they can, each of the different elements in the steel can land within to be considered a certain type of steel, like 1084. The 1084 I have has a lower manganese content, and I very easily can get a Hamon in it. But it really ultimately comes down to who made or what the chemical composition of that 1084 is. And you might get to the point where you can heat treat it and you try to create a Hamon, and no Hamon is going to happen because it just has too much manganese and it doesn't create an opportunity for that Hamon to happen. And that's why, you know, there's some 1075 out there you can get a wicked Hamon in, and others that you can't. And it's just because there are different quantities of these alloying elements in the steel. So I would really try to figure out who got whoever you bought that steel from. They should be able to give you a chemical composition of that steel. Also, though, ultimately, you know, a W2, a 1095, those are shallower hardening steels. Even W1, which you can readily get from like online metals, you'll have to forge it down usually from like a round stock, but you can forge a knife out of that. All of those are shallow hardening steels that are much easier to develop a hamon with.
There you go. Boom.
Not going to get a better answer than that.
No, sir. No, sir.
Gabe Jensen 09er asked, what do you do when you fuck up an order multiple times?
You cry.
You fix it. You don't send the fuck up. You fix it. I actually have a wall of all my big fuck ups, and I'm getting to the point now where I like them. Like, I'm working on a knife now that I'm just like, I'm kind of on the fence about, and I'm thinking, well, if it doesn't work out the way I want it to, it's going to look great on my wall. I actually, the biggest fuck up I ever had was, I think it was last year. I was doing a knife with very light curly maple and a red liner, and I was using red epoxy. And I actually, what happened was my holes were too big for the pins or Corby bolts, and the red was leaking through to the outside edge of the Corby bolts. And because the wood was so blonde, it was just staining the wood. And it was like, I had to do that knife handle over four times, and it was driving me crazy. And I actually took all the scales and I put them on a board, and I just put them on my wall and saying, you know, to show me like, look, it doesn't matter how many times you do it. You gotta do it. You gotta fix it. And you also have to identify what the problem was and stay away from that problem. You can't keep doing the same thing over and over again.
It's slightly different for me because I don't really do custom orders anymore. So most of mine are sort of multiples. So I generally don't experiment with a customer order. The experimenting is always done beforehand. And once it's been worked out, then I can go ahead and, you know, and do the order. I'd always, if it's something I haven't done before, I'd always make sure that I've got a couple that I can fuck up on first. You know, the first few attempts, I've got a couple in the bag there. So until I get it right, then the customer order starts. So it's slightly different for me, but I know you guys who do, you know, single customer orders, it's got to be some nervous times at times.
It's also, you have to kind of be, it's unfortunate to say it, but you also have to kind of allow yourself to say, all right, I made a mistake. And you have to figure out a way that you can go on, because it can be like that shocking gut feeling of I made a huge mistake, or this didn't really work, or what did I do, or what did I do wrong, or I don't even know what I did wrong. And just be like, all right, well, you know, these things, once in a while, these things happen, and you have to figure out a way to make sure they don't happen anymore.
Yeah. Yeah, Craig, I would say you're smarter than me, because I have a tendency to experiment on my actual builds as I'm doing them, which is not, I would not recommend that for anybody. But recently, you know, I had, it was a few weeks ago, I finished up a blue handled kind of Sanmai style knife. And it took me three times of forging, not only forging the blade, but forging the steel for the blade three different separate times. So what would have normally taken maybe a week or a week and a half ended up taking 3 weeks to build one knife, because I kept screwing up on the pattern and the steel and I wasn't hitting the aesthetic that the customer was going, or was really wanting for their build. But like Jeff said at the beginning, like you don't send it out. You just gotta kind of, you either need to figure it out and fix it and get it right, or recognize that maybe you've overextended yourself and you're trying to do something that you can't actually do. Which I've had, it's hard to admit to yourself, but I've definitely had to do that and talk to a customer about, you know, other possible routes to go or changes to make to the design. So it is something that's more within my grasp, I guess. So
There you go.
It's the nature of the beast, I think. Yeah. If you're doing something custom, you're going to come across some headaches, surely, yeah.
And, you know, a little bit of hardships would make you a better... If everything was easy all the time, I mean, where would be the excitement? So you need a little bit of peril in your life, right? No?
Gold stars for days.
Less peril? Less peril? Is that you guys like less peril? I don't mind a little peril. Once in a while, it's peril time.
Living on the edge.
Yeah. So
shall we move on from questions to tips?
All right, do it.
Hey, you know what you should do?
All right, this is the part of the show where we ask for your tips and advice. And so we're going to kick it off actually right here with Benjamin. Jammin Cocker?
No, Benjamin. No.
Oh, Benjamin.
Jammin Cocker. That's the best misread ever.
Oh, Benjamin Cocker. Oh, you poor bastard.
I'm sorry. I'm dyslexic. I'm illiterate.
Benjamin. It's Benjamin.
Jammin Cocker.
That's the best. Fucking Benjamin Cocker, you're the greatest. That's almost as good as fucking. That's better than fucking KLB.
The Gooch.
All right, Benjamin. From now on, you have to send in a question every
bastard.
Episode.
You poor little bastard. Oh God damn, that was so good. you poor fucker, you.
All right,
go ahead, Ben.
Okay. All right. Benjamin, sorry, bud.
Oh, sorry. I'm sorry.
He's got a really good tip for us.
Fucking better be good.
Better be good. Oh, Jammin Cocker got a little tip. Oh, gee.
Oh, holy shit. Okay, Jeff, you gotta shut the fuck up. You're making me laugh.
I'm crying, Ben Jammin Cocker.
Okay. He says, a tip I've learned to use with epoxy. I heard on the last podcast, to use brake cleaner, but regular distilled white vinegar will clean and dissolve many uncured epoxies. I like it much better than brake cleaner. That's good.
We get a lot of people send us all their variations of cleaning up epoxy. I throw that in now. Every time someone's got a new way to clean up epoxy, I throw it in just because we've gotten it all. Use WD-40 and use brake cleaner and now vinegar. Keep them coming, guys.
You know, I actually have another one. This is one that Jamie Lundell, my former shopmate at Dragon's Breath, used to always do. But he would use like Johnson's Paste Wax. There's something about the wax. So when he is kind of, he'll glue something up and it gets all covered in epoxy like your handles look like, Jeff. But then he has Johnson's Paste Wax right there, and he just rubs it on all over, and for whatever reason, it keeps the epoxy from curing, so he can basically wipe the entire outside of the knife handle clean, and then, so there's no schmutz all over the outside. Thanks, Ben. All right, so the rest of these tips are sponsored by Benjamin Cocker.
The next one is from Hammer and Tyne. I like this one. You know what you should do? A lot of makers use toaster ovens for tempering, but they are notorious for fluctuating in temperature, which can easily cause a blade to be over-tempered. So he fills a small cake pan or tray with sand and preheats the oven for enough time to completely heat the sand up. So when you're ready to temper your blades, the thermal mass of the sand will help sort of minimize the temperature swings and the changes there. So having a tray the size of the oven interior also greatly reduces the occurrence of hot spots that can result in overheated blade tips and thinner areas. Hmm. Nice.
There's also a company, actually TurnTex, who makes cactus juice. They have a small box that you plug into your toaster oven into, and it's called the oven tamer, and it'll actually regulate the temperature in your toaster oven. because the toaster ovens, they're the worst. I once tempered a pair, back in the day, you think you turn into 400 degrees. Those motherfuckers came out like purple and blue. Yeah. The temper was just like, that ain't right. So yeah, they turn on and then the sensor in those toaster ovens are just super, super slow. And it's like on or off. So you can get, some people make these machines. I know Turntex makes them and you plug it in and then it'll regulate you to a small, very, very fast level. But I like that idea of, the sand to kind of slow down the heat. I would imagine you probably have to run it for a while because it always overshoots. It's not going to just sail into 400 degrees. It's going to probably overshoot by a mile. And then it'll take a while to kind of like come back down.
Mm-hmm. It's going to help.
Great idea.
Even if you're using a sort of domestic oven, I'd put heat bricks or just any sort of bricks into that oven. It does the same thing. It's just that thermal mass, it'll just help keep the heat in and then the rest of it. So, yeah, it's a good tip.
Yes, you gave a tip a number of months ago that I use to this day that's great. When you're trying to, I know a lot of guys, if they have one oven and they're going from heat treatment to tempering, a lot of times it takes a long time for the oven to kind of come down, especially if it's, 1,500 degrees and you're trying to get to 400 degrees. And a lot of times these ovens will overshoot because of all that residual heat in the bricks. And you, Craig, said to put a couple fire bricks in the oven to absorb some of the in the hot oven to absorb some of that heat. And boy, it works great. That is such a great way to cool your oven down so you can start to temper. Yeah. Just put the bricks in, and then after a while, you pull them out. The bricks are hot, and then your oven's cooler.
Do you close it up when you do that?
No, I keep the door. I keep them open. I keep the doors open, just to kind of like help diffuse some of that heat. But I put two fire bricks in, and it just came down really, really quick.
Sure.
Yeah. It just sucks the heat out. Yeah.
Okay. The next one comes from Diamond Metalworks. Here's a little tip/opinion for new makers always asking about things that they should avoid to be great. Avoid hitting hardened metal against each other. Avoid slipping your arm into a bandsaw, drilling a hole in your hand, burning down your shop. But allow yourself to fail on a few projects. You will learn so much more. Thanks for the great entertainment. So there you go. Don't burn your shop down. That's a good tip.
Yeah.
I mean,
this whole thing about allowing yourself to fail as well, I think I sort of agree with it, but that's never the intention, surely. Whatever you do, you're never going into thinking, I'm going to fail here. You always go in with a mindset of, you're going to nail whatever you're doing.
But
I find that really strange. People say, you should learn to fail.
Well, here's what it comes down to. Attention. It comes down to this concept of perfection. And then this is bullshit, or that's shit, or this geometry is bad, or this sucks, or you suck, or that sucks, or this guy sucks. And we've created this, this super, super brave, no room for error community. And I think that, that we, with whatever we put on Instagram or whatever we put on social media, is we have this air of perfection, and you're the top of your class, and make the best knives, top 10 guy, da da. And it becomes intimidating if you make a mistake because then you see the mistake you made, and I'm like, I ain't good. I'm never going to be as good as that guy. I think that there's this, you have to like weigh the perfection versus, human error, and kind of like relieve yourself a little bit. You know what I mean?
Definitely.
Relieve yourself.
Definitely. Relieve yourself. Yeah.
Take a leap. All right. This next one's from Iron Ridge Forge. It says, when you need to burn a tang to get a nice snug fit up, make a replica of the tang shape in mild steel to avoid ruining the heat treat. Also, notch the tang in alternating spots to get the epoxy to secure it in place solidly. Awesome podcast. Thanks.
A P.S. before you start in, I could tell after Ben Jammin' Cocker, you're very, very careful. You're the next question. I was like, all right, he is on the line. He ain't gonna do Ben Jammin' Cocker for a while. We're gonna have to really slip him up to get that. Fucking good.
Sorry, Ben.
No. He's okay. He got a good laugh out of it too, or he didn't.
Yeah, I'm sure. Yeah, but notching the tang. To get extra grip from the epoxy. That's a good one.
I like making the replica tangs, especially I've seen when knife makers are doing a forged fit for their guards. And I'm not a guard guy, But I like the fact that some guys make, if they have a standard style that they like, they'll make a drift the size of the tang. So their drift will make a perfect slot so they can hot slot their tang hole.
With Ben Jimmy.
Yeah, that's right. There you go. Looking good.
We got beef.
All right, we got a few leftover beefs from the holidays still, so we're going to go through some of those. This first one is from Dixon Knives. He says, my beef is this sudden extra expense at Christmas when you have a kid. On top of the obvious presents. What's up?
I'm laughing. No, I like he's getting mad at kids.
Very careful still.
No. You're good. You're good. Keep it.
Oh, he's getting mad at his kid. Okay, yeah. On top of the obvious presents you buy them, which is fine, the amount of the presents and the cards you buy everyone else doubles because everyone expects one from them too. Makes no sense to me. My daughter, only one and a half. Sorry, Jesus, I can't read anymore. My daughter's only one and a half and is already spending my money. Love the pod. Yeah. Merry Christmas, cuties. Right. XOXO. Jeez,
Dixon Knives, you want to have twins.
Yeah. Poor Dixon Knives. Poor Dixon Knives. Yeah. It's tough, man. It's tough. Now, next beef might have been my favorite beef. It just came in. This is Running Man Ford. She's a good dude. Really good guy out in California. Awesome knife maker. My beef is when you offer a discount to a customer and then that customer tells a friend that he should get the same discount. So when the friend hits me up and asks for the same discount, I grit my teeth and say, okay, fine. But then that asshole doesn't buy anything and he ghosts me.
Oh my God.
You're telling everybody about the discount you could have had.
I fucking love this beef because it is so true. They'll like, you know, some of these guys, they think, you know, they hear something, you know, they hear a discount and then they tell their friends. I love this beef. This is a very unique beef, but I hate the fact that this dude did that. And then the worst part is he fucking oinked you for the beef. He oinked you for the discount and then he fucked off. God damn.
Community Showcase.
Yeah, that's right, baby. We're going to give a little bit of love to people out in the universe that you should be following. So, what do you got, Craig?
I'm going to go for our greatest listener. His head may have been turned slightly, but I think we've won him back. I'm pretty sure. So it's Dominic Schwab of Schwab's Custom Knives. But I think it's particularly apt, actually, because this week we're starting our build along, and they are sort of bushcraft knives, sort of hunting knives, that kind of thing. And that's what Dominic does very well. So go take a look at Schwab's_custom_knives and maybe send him a message telling him why Knife Talk should be his favorite podcast.
Don't let him.
Watch his DMs blow up.
Yeah, let him listen to whatever the hell he wants to, for God's sakes.
Nope. Fight for every listener.
All right, fight. You heard it. You heard it here first. Except for you're gonna have to sing a song to Benjamin Jammin' Cocker because he might need to be brought back. He's gonna be on Knife Talk.
I hope you like jamming too.
he's gonna be like, fuck this podcast. I'm making fun of my name. I want to listen to that Knife Talk Down Under. That's what I'm calling your podcast, Mert.
Knife Talk Down Under. We should make T-shirts.
T-shirts.
Yeah. All right. So this week I want to give some community love to Touch Knives. It is a father and son duo who unfortunately now is just a son, Eric Touch. His father actually just passed away recently. But the knives, you should go follow them on Instagram. It's spelled T-U-C-H Knives. They do really incredible, really beautiful work, especially the file work on their kind of like monosteel scales and liners. They do all this wild sculpting and fullering through the steel. It's really beautiful. And they're based out of Portland, Oregon. They're right up here in the Northwest. So, just go give them a follow, give them some love. It's really inspiring. Like I said, really inspiring, very clean stuff on here.
I would like to give a smack and tickle to Mattia @Mattia_Bladesmith. Mattia, M-A-T-T-I-A _Bladesmith. He's an amazing knife maker. Awesome knife maker. He's in Italy. He makes beautiful forged knives. Does Damascus. He does it. He's a beautiful blacksmith. Great guy. Except anytime I cook and I post anything to my stories, he slips into my DMs and tells me how I'm calling it something that's not. And the funny thing is the reason why he wasn't going to be my community showcase until I looked at his Instagram page and his profile. He says, a knife maker, father, da, da, da. And he said, and it says food maniac. And then I thought, you know what? He's saying he's a food maniac and he's behaving like a food maniac. He everything I make, he says, oh, that's this or that's that. And I'm just like, no, that's this. And he goes, we'll go back and forth a little bit. And I'm kind of, be honest with you, I'm a little tired of it, but he is everything he says he is, because he's a beautiful knife maker, but he's, pardon me, he's also a food maniac. He slips into my DMs and tells me, that's a tortilla, that's a frittata, or that's not, you don't put, bay leaf and sofrito. Everything's a problem. So I'm sending you peace and love, Mattia. I'm going to give you a little Italian, and if you keep it up and I meet you, a schiaffi in faccia, which means a slap in the face. So I'm giving you a little slap in the face. I'm giving you the love, though, because you're an awesome knife maker. You're a good dude. This is funsy stuff, so we're having a good time. So go follow Mattia, and if he follows you, see if he'll criticize the food that you make. See, maybe he'll tell you what you're doing wrong, too. So I'm with you, Mattia. I'm with you. This is all fun and games.
What you got, babe?
Okay, this is time for our
beefs. Are you going to do what I think you're going to do? Go ahead. Go ahead.
My beef. Shall I go first? Yeah. My beef is Dominic Carr.
I love every episode. Every system you're putting him in, every system. All right.
Get a lot of you in my Saturday night. My Saturday night. So there I am sitting on the sofa, nice and calm. We're watching just crappy TV, relaxing, ready to fall asleep. Phone pings, and it's Dominic bloody Schwab, who has now become my favourite listener, by the way. But for that 10 minutes, Dominic, we got my blood pumping. So, yeah, my beef is Dominic Schwab and people telling us that we're not the best. It's not acceptable. It's not acceptable.
Dominic, he's gotten in your head. He's been in three different segments.
Yep.
Wow.
It's the Dominic show. We've got to win him back.
Put him in the beefs. Might not win him back. I don't know. You might have to write him another song.
It was a 10-minute beef. It was just 10 minutes, and I was thinking, okay. Then I realized we need to win him back.
There you go. I love that you did that. It's funny.
Yeah. My beef this week is people who think they're so fucking smart. it's a thing. People think they're so fucking smart, and they think that it's really important that you know it, even though the reality is they're fucking dummies. Neil Kamimura and I have been doing these kind of like back and forth static cut videos where we're, instead of doing the big giant swing and then hitting something and cutting it, we're just holding the blade right next to the paper towel roll or roll of paper, or even we did 1-inch hemp ropes. And he actually ended up having to do a follow-up video after he did the hemp rope, because he had a bunch of people saying, that's bullshit, that's fake, blah, blah, blah. And then I did the static cut video with the rope, and I got the exact same thing.
You're kidding me. Like,
and then the thing that drove me crazy is people were like, the piece of rope you pick up at the end of the video, it has tape on it. That wasn't there at the beginning. It actually was there the whole fucking time, you idiots. If you watch the video and you see the cut, you will see a flash of blue as the chunk of rope goes flying off of the rest of the rope. And I actually made a follow-up video that I didn't end up posting because I was like, you know what? Fuck these guys. And so I just went through and started blocking and removing all of them. I'm just like,
Benjamin wasn't in that one, was he?
No. Benjamin. But it's just, I don't understand this human tendency to feel like you gotta show people that you're so fucking smart.
Yeah.
But you don't. You don't, actually. And usually it's the people who keep their mouth shut who are smarter than you. And so thank you, everybody, for all the very nice people, for all your nice things that you said. But it's just, it doesn't make sense to me. And it, I don't know.
Our beef is the
obnoxious.
Same. My beef is the same. I am stunned at the why people feel the need to say something. And I actually had the anti-beef. And the anti-beef is this guy, his Instagram is, I've mentioned before, dies in every film. His name is Onur Kaglar. Onur Kaglar. Here's a guy, he's in the UK. He is a former military veteran. He served his country. He's an MMA fighter. And he does restoration videos. He does YouTube videos. And when the YouTube comments come up, he seizes on these comments and fucks with every single comment. And it is like hilarious. It's like too much energy for me. Like I've said this, I said this in the last episode. Going back and forth with people, I don't, it's too much emotional energy for me to want to deal with. That's why in the Epicurious video, I won't look at the comments. I just can't, I can't, you know. And the funniest part is if you think about these people, if they were your friend, like your good friend or your brother or your cousin or your mother or something like that, then you could feel bad about it. But these people don't, they're commenting on someone they don't even know. But what Onur does, Dies in Every Film does, is he screen caps, and no matter what they say, if it's good, he, you know, I don't know if he makes a big deal about it. If it's bad, he'll whip their ass and then post on his stories, which is always hilarious. He calls them a cabbage. He's you know, they didn't like the way he made an axe with a chain handle, and they said it won't work. And he goes, it won't work because you're late, you know, you're fat and you're living in your basement with your mom's basement or something like that. The funniest thing is this dude is a legitimate nightmare. Like he's a legitimate professional fighter. I've seen he's got some of his fights online. If you went up to anybody, why would you go after? You would never go up to this guy in the street and say any of these things. The guy he's super nice guy, real funny. He makes me laugh real hard. But I just don't understand that need to, why bother telling anybody anything negative at all? Like, it doesn't make any sense to me. So why, I don't understand why these people say it. Because I know that, I saw that Neil had did the stupid video because he thought people were sending him things. What's the point of addressing these people? And what's the point of them even saying anything anyway?
Yeah.
I mean, it makes no sense. I mean, it just seems like an incredibly poor mismanagement of your time and energy. I don't get it at all. I know Jeremy gets it too. Jeremy, Simple Little Life, he did a video crying because someone says you're not a real knife maker. Somebody wrote in my I forged a knife last week and they wrote, oh, that's real forging, not that stock removal. Bitch, I make fucking stock removal knives 90% of the time. What's the point of even giving anybody some sort of pecking order? It's a mismanagement of your time.
And these are always people, like Morocco said, these are the dull people saying these things. Intelligent people know. It's the dull people who like to make themselves feel a bit better.
Or the intelligent people don't care. Like Jimmy DeResta says in the Making It podcast, he's like, it's the people who don't know shit who say stuff. And it's the people, professionals, what are they going to waste their time? What do you think? You think Aaron Wilburn's going to send you a message saying all that, you know, you didn't do that right? No, he didn't give a fuck. Cut your fucking rope and be on with it. You're good. You cut the rope. The master bladesmiths have been super, super supportive of me. And then there's no reason they have to. They don't have to do a thing. They're just like, yeah, it looks great. Or that's fine. It doesn't, and those skin off their neck. I don't understand. It makes no sense to me. That's what it is. This mismanagement of time and energy.
Yeah.
So there you go.
Beefed
out. Fucking A. That's it.
That's a show. That's a show. So remember, we're starting our build along this week. If you want to build along with us, the link will be in the description here. It'll also be on our YouTube video showing how you can design them. I'm personally going to be using 01. So next week we'll be heat treating that. So up to you what steel you want to use. But next week we'll be talking about the heat treating
process.
How
will we get the link to the drawing?
It'll be in the link in the on the podcast page. So on knifetalk.net for this episode, in the show notes, there'll be a link there. I'll also be doing a video as well of me showing the design, and I'll put the link in there as well. But yeah, it's all good. So as many as possible doing the build along. It would be real fun to see other people's work And if you've got any tips, you know, how you made things a little bit better, just let us know. We'd be keen to share all that kind of stuff. And that's it. I think we've had a good show.
Happy birthday, Craig.
Happy birthday, old man.
Many thanks.